The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit. Track budgets and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
There is a place that is spoken about only in whispers. A dark area that spawns the beginnings of urban legends. A place where anything can happen and usually does. During the light of day, it hides just outside of view. But when the sun goes down, spirits, creatures of the night, roam free. And things do go bump in the night. It is in every state and every country. And there is no escaping it, no matter how safe you feel behind your locked doors and latched windows. So we invite you to turn down the lights and turn up your radio while we join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, your hosts, on a journey into the darkness on the edge of town.
Hello and welcome. It's a brand new week. You're tuned into the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness, and we've got a full week of fun in line for you. A couple of shows on UFOs. Tim, we're going to be covering UFOs. How about that?
Nice.
Yeah, we've got that going for us. And I've got to talk to you real quick about this, Tim. I am really psyched about tomorrow's True Crime Tuesday episode. Because I think, personally, this is one of the weirdest stories. We've talked in general about Ted Bundy before, where we've dabbled as we've talked about many different serial killers. I don't think we've ever really gone deep into the story of Ted Bundy. And tomorrow we're going to do this with Kevin Sullivan. He's written his third book in his trilogy about Ted Bundy. And he has dug and dug and researched and found some of the most bizarre aspects of this case. But I want people that are not subscribed, I want you to get a little taste of this because he talks with me about something that he's never talked about publicly before. Do you have that clip queued up, Tim?
Yes, I do.
All right, go ahead. Fire it off.
There were some aspects of Ted Bundy's psychological makeup, even as a child, that were not right.
Here's something that really kind of intrigues me. Because, as you know, I do a paranormal radio show 5 days a week.
Sure.
If ever there was an opportunity to believe in a reincarnated spirit showing itself, to me, this sounds like it. When you're a 3 or 4 year old kid and you're looking at your aunt under the blankets and you're putting knives in compromising places. Man, if that doesn't seem like an old soul that has reawakened in this new form and might, you know, in a supernatural or metaphysical way, explain how he could be almost two people at once. Was there more than one soul, one consciousness that lived inside Ted Bundy's body? And it's easy for us to say psychologically, is he a split personality or dissociative behavior?
Right.
But this seems to be above and beyond even the normal weirdness of a 3 or 4 year old. I mean, this is
bizarre. Well, and I never talk about what I'm about to tell you in my true crime books, but there's a lot of people that think, and I think so too, that for some reason doors were opened and demonic spirits got into Bundy when he was young. And that when he started embracing a lot of this stuff, they would energize it. So I do believe in that. And people that don't even believe in this stuff have talked about some of the supernatural, a couple times supernatural events happened that they witnessed when Bundy was sitting there. Stephen Michaud, who wrote along with Hugh Ainsworth, The Only Living Witness, and they did also a book of the transcripts of the tapes they made with Bundy called Conversations of a Killer. He mentions a situation where when Ted began to talk about a murder, he said he grabbed my my recorder, pulled it up to his face, and it's like he went into a trance. And then during this trance-like state, he said a white welt appeared on his face, and like a line drew across his face, and it was there. He said, I know this is going to sound weird, but I saw it myself. And he said, and during this trance-like state, when he was describing this murder, and apparently this happened more than once, that welt would be there just coming out of nowhere, and then it would disappear after he was done. Then he would kind of come back to himself. And then also there were some other people, not even related to these writers, who were sitting with Bundy on his defense team in Florida when the news was brought to them that they had located the body of Kimberly Leach, a 12-year-old girl that he had killed. And they said when Ted heard it along with them there, they said a strange smell started emanating from him. His body tone changed, and it's like he was changing, transforming right before them. And these guys don't know what that is. I do.
Dude, isn't that not one of the weirdest, most gnarly segments you've ever heard? I mean, that has opened my mind to a whole different perspective to this case.
Yeah, that's just bizarre. And to think of the ramifications, again, I'm not a Bundy apologist. I'm not one to walk around saying that what he did was in any way justified whatsoever. Right, but the whole devil made me do it thing has to come up in that conversation if you think even for a minute that Bundy might have been in any way possessed by anything, whether it be a past life spirit or even by the devil himself.
And the fact is, Bundy would have hated to be looked at as crazy or insane. As a matter of fact, he was his own legal counsel, and he was hyper intelligent. And for people to think he'd be nuts, that's why I don't think they've played up much of this angle. But that to me was when he's telling me that story, Tim, every little hair on my body was standing completely up. I was goosebumps from head to toe. And that's just 3 minutes of this interview. You've got to hear the whole thing. You can subscribe now. Go to darknessradio.com. You'll see the True Crime Tuesday banner. Click on that banner. It'll take you to our Patreon page. You can sign up there. $5 a month will get you 4 brand new episodes every month. They're anywhere from 90 minutes to 120 minutes long. Tomorrow's episode, The Devil and Ted Bundy, along with Dumb Crimes and Stupid Criminals, is almost exactly 2 hours on the button. So you can check that out. Subscribe. This is a great jumping off point. If you have not signed up yet, check this episode out. It is and really fascinating if you're into the whole serial killer genre and trying to understand these people. There's some stuff that he digs out that other investigators didn't even know about this case. It's unnerving. The guy's been dead for over, I think, 20 years, almost 30 years, and he is still such a part of our world. And when you think, as I said at the beginning of the episode, when you think serial killer, Ted Bundy is one of the first ones to jump to your mind.
Oh yeah.
It's weird. Speaking of weird, we've got a full night of supernatural news and Parashare heading your way. We've got a lot of stories to share from around the world this week in the paranormal realm. And we've also got some of your stories to share in Parashare, but back at the supernatural news desk where he belongs, Mr. Tim Dennis, Timmy D, where shall we begin this evening's journey?
Well, we begin on a sad note, actually, Dave, tonight. We begin with the story of Jack Smurl, actually, who passed away this past week. A man whose name often conjures a decades-old haunting story has died at the age of 75. Karen Smurl, Jack Smurl's youngest twin daughter, said her father died on Thursday night of last week at her twin sister's home in Sullivan County. It was so quick, she said. We didn't expect it because he had been doing so well. She said he passed away around 11 p.m. Thursday after previously surviving several setbacks related to his health issues. A Wilkes-Barre native, Jack Smurl and his family rose to notoriety in the late 1980s when they reported what they believed to be paranormal activity occurring in their West Pittston home. The Smurls had moved to a home in Chase Street in West Pittston in August of 1986 and sparked a media frenzy when they went public with stories of demonic attacks that had occurred in the house. Jack Smurl, then 44, and his then 17-year-old daughter Dawn spoke of attacks by demons and haunting occurrences like sounds of howls and screams, dark shapes following people in the house, and even an instance when family members were levitated and their German Shepherd was slammed against the wall. Jack Smurl once reported that when he tried to pray the rosary, a demon dragged him from his bed. Karen Smurl, who was younger than 10 at the time, said her father worked to protect the family from onlookers and naysayers once the story started to spread through television and newspaper stories. I remember it once it got out into the media, we had people knocking on our windows and doors, bricks thrown through our windows, and people were terrorizing us. She said he was scared too, but he was always the tough one. She remembered one day when reporters and curious neighbors swarmed their front yard. Her father and grandfather sat on the front porch holding their rifles. My dad would have done anything he could to protect us, she said. We just learned to always have each other's backs. Paranormal investigators and reporters descended upon the family and their West Pittston home. Famed demonologist Ed and Lorraine Warren of Connecticut investigated the family's claims and concluded that several demons haunted the family, and four benevolent and one violent demon actually haunted their home. The family sought exorcisms and other help to end the hauntings. The incident stopped by October of 1986, and the family moved back to Wilkes-Barre in 1988. From that time on, Karen Smurl said her father put the incidents behind him.
Karen, you know, we're a big fan of you and your family, and it's always been a pleasure having you on our show with us. We wish you and your family all the best in the world to recover from this loss. Oh, that's so sad. All right, where are we going to go next, sir?
Well, Dave, we go to the land of Hollywood. Specifically, you know, we talked a couple weeks ago about Rob Lowe and his family and the low files. It turns out that there may be an interesting ending to this season after all.
Okay.
It turns out Rob Lowe is convinced that he's met Bigfoot. And he doesn't care if he sounds like a kook.
Okay, well, how did this happen? Where did it happen?
Well, the story goes and asks the question, has Rob Lowe lost his marbles? You might think so after watching the first trailer for A&E's upcoming docuseries, The Lowe Files, which finds Lowe and his two sons, Matthew and John Owen, setting out to solve paranormal mysteries and legendary myths across the country. Let's just say this is not what we expected Lowe to be doing after The Grinder was canceled. I know I didn't. In an exclusive interview with Entertainment Weekly, Lowe teases the new series by spoiling what will surely be one of the most talked about episodes. The season finale finds the Lowe gentleman, and we use the term loosely, searching for the one and only Bigfoot. And as it turns out, they actually saw him with their own eyes. Lowe tells the magazine that he saw the creature known as the Wood Ape, which is the Ozark version of Bigfoot. He said, I'm fully aware that I sound like a crazy Hollywood kook right now. I was lying on the ground thinking I was going to be killed, teasing the encounter even more. Lowe said, we're 100 miles from the nearest town. We spent 45 minutes on the most rugged, brutal mountain trails. It's 1 in the morning. There are a lot of serious former military men with loaded weapons. Then something started approaching our camps that is defying their orders to stop and their warnings that they were armed. The Lowe Files is clearly going to be the most bizarre series of the summer. And you, of course, can watch that this summer. I believe it's on A&E. I don't know, Dave.
I'm interested in it, but I got to tell you this. That's got to make the guys from Finding Bigfoot feel like a bunch of losers.
Well, yeah. I mean, they've been
in how many seasons? What are they, 8 seasons in on that series?
Yeah.
Never found a damn thing. Rob Lowe. Well, Rob, I will give him this. If you were a bipedal, hominid, two-legged walking creature, who would draw your attention more, Bobo Fay or the remarkably good-looking Rob Lowe?
Well, in that voice, too. I mean,
right.
Let's face it.
So, yeah. You know, I guess if I was going to expose myself, and I don't mean in a sexual way, or maybe I do, to Rob Lowe,
well,
I could see of all the people, Rob Lowe would be the one I'd want to see me in my natural habitat.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Sure. And, I mean, there's also one other thing that might draw. I mean, we've brought it up before. One other thing that might draw Bigfoot out of the woods to maybe, you know, want to want to get to know Rob a little bit better. And that just so happens to be the fact that Rob has a sexy little tape out there from years past.
Oh, come on.
I'm
You're
just saying.
Patching that up. Well, I'm hoping Rob joins our show. We put out an invitation to him. I'm a huge fan, and I'm looking forward to this series. I want to see what they do. I think the guy's he's comically hilarious. He's a very good actor, and that he has this kind of interest in his life, and he's willing to expose it and put it out there. I think that's great. I look forward to seeing what the show does. I mean, for God's sakes, like I said, they've already accomplished more in the first season, it sounds like, than Finding Bigfoot did in 8. So
wouldn't it be something
I'm all for that.
If it's Rob Lowe who ends up getting the full body apparition on camera, ends up getting Bigfoot, the alien ends up landing right in front of him, comes off the ship and says, "We're here," and everything just happens to Rob Lowe.
Again, no, I think that only makes sense to me at this point. If it's going to happen, it should happen to Rob Lowe. Sounds like a new DirecTV commercial to me, though, that they're working on. All right, what's your next story for us, sir?
Well, we stay in the land of TV, where Zach Bagans' new documentary film, The Demon House, is nearing completion after years in post-production. Now, I'll tell you, Dave, I've had some people that have, some listeners that have asked me, do you know what's going on with this thing? A note to you guys, I don't know, but I'm about to read a story that'll tell you. Zach Bagans' new documentary film, The Demon House, is nearing completion after nearly 3 years in post-production. Fans of Zach Bagans and his long-running Travel Channel reality TV series Ghost Adventures have been anxiously awaiting for The Demon House to air after it was originally supposed to be released in the fall of 2015. Zach Bagans purchased the infamous Demon House located in Gary, Indiana in 2014 to create the documentary about the home's previous residents and the paranormal activity they reportedly experienced there. As a longtime paranormal investigator, Zach was drawn to the Demon House in early 2014 after the home's previous tenants reported experiencing strange events, according to a recent post on The Hauntist. In November of 2011, Latoya Ammons moved into the Demon House with her three children and her mother. According to Ammons, activity began happening right away, including swarms of flies, levitation, apparitions, unexplained noises, and possession. The Ammons family eventually left the home, and Zach Bagans purchased the rental cottage in February of 2014 to do his own investigation into its reported 200 demons. A few months later, the Committee for the Skeptical Inquiry published a report from a skeptical demonologist. I'd like to meet that skeptical demonologist, a demonologist who goes out and hunts demons but is skeptical that they exist. Kind of an oxymoron.
Well, no,
countering Ammons' claims of...
Yeah, if he's asking the questions, I can understand that. I don't think you just jump in and automatically assume everything's demonic, so I appreciate a skeptical demonologist.
I'm just saying. Countering Ammons' claims of paranormal activity inside the Demon House, according to the report, none of the alleged hauntings or demonic activity were ever proven inside the Demon House, and all parties involved were reportedly only seeking, as the demonologist put it, quote-unquote, notoriety. The priest involved in the Demon House case, Michael Maginot, actually signed a contract with Zach Bagans to assist in the production of the Demon House documentary. But amid all of the controversy surrounding the Demon House, Zach Bagans announced in January of 2015 via his Instagram account that filming for the Demon House had wrapped and the documentary was due to air in the fall of 2015. Ghost Adventures fans were so excited and looking forward to watching the Demon House documentary that IMDb calls the most authenticated case of possession in American history. That's what they're calling the film. A year before the Demon House was due to air, Nick Groff, one of the original lead investigators on Ghost Adventures, announced that he would not appear in remaining episodes of season 10 of Ghost Adventures, reportedly to pursue other paranormal ventures, according to AXS in December of 2014. In January of 2016, Doubtful News shared that the production and release of the Demon House had been delayed with a new release date scheduled for sometime in 2016, citing possible problems with the crew. And it says here in parentheses, referring to Nick's departure, problems with the site itself or even problems documenting paranormal activity. Even though Zach Bagans himself confirmed the release of the Demon House in 2016 via Dread Central, the 40-year-old popular paranormal investigator has since demolished the Demon House, also noted by Dread Central, and the documentary film has remained in post-production status ever since, leaving fans really wishing this would come on TV already. According to Zach Bagans' official Twitter account 2 days ago, the wait for the Demon House may be coming to an end. On Monday, Zach Bagans retweeted a tweet from American singer-songwriter and composer Mimi Page, who tweeted that she's mastering her score for the Demon House, adding that the documentary is coming soon. Just over a month ago, Zach sent out a tweet stating that the Demon House is in its final stages of completion, sending Zach's impatient Twitter followers into a frenzy. Some fans commented that they've been waiting forever for the release of the Demon House, while other fans said they thought the documentary was never coming. Billy Talley, who joined the crew of Ghost Adventures for Season 10, also confirmed via his own Twitter account in January that the Demon House documentary will be released soon after fans had assumed that the project had been abandoned, according to a thread on Reddit. Fans continue to ask Zach for a definitive release date on the Demon House. Bagans has not confirmed a projected release date for the documentary, but has been teasing about a new miniseries to air on the Travel Channel this fall, previously reported by The Inquisitor. And fans say that around Halloween would be the perfect time to watch the Demon House documentary. So with that, Dave, what do you think? If you had to speculate, and it's speculation only, when do you think we'll see the Demon House?
I don't know. I, if he doesn't do it soon, I think he's going to miss out on the window of opportunity. It should have been out 2 years ago, but I also know how busy his schedule is. I mean, the guy's on the road constantly filming for Ghost Adventures. I worked for their series as a location scout for 4 years. He's constantly on the road, and he is very hands-on in all aspects of production, so it's not just something he turns over. I would hope that by this October he would cash in on it and get it out there, but I think he's also been looking at avenues to distribute the film, and where do you want to take it? Do you want it to just be on the Travel Channel? Do you maybe want it to make it into movie theaters, straight to DVD? I don't know. I think there's a lot at play here for something like this. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how it finally makes its way to the mass public. I wish I had more insight. I wish I had more insight. I don't. I was in the same boat all of you are. It was just constantly, hey, man, how's that going? He goes, good, but it's slow. I've got a lot on my plate. So that's all I knew about it. But I wish him a lot of luck with it. I hope he succeeds, and I hope it's as good as I've heard. So, all right, where else are we going to go now?
Well, we go out to another ghost hunter who has caught some paranormal activity on their camera. In a creepy video that's been released, ghost hunter Tony Smith is seen in a graveyard by himself, calling out to spirits nearby. Then, just like in all the other real ghost stories, a shadowy figure is seen moving past behind him, to which he is completely oblivious. Tony is part of the team for Haunted Adventures, and they were filming at the Strelley Manor in the UK for their latest episode called Seeking the Unknown. In the footage, Tony can be heard saying that standing in the graveyard alone is very unnerving. He also is quoted as saying, "Any spirits around me, come forward, give me a shove," he asks out loud. "Come on, make yourself known," he also says. Well, he certainly got a response to that as a shadowy figure whizzes right past him. Tony says he was hearing noises and felt a presence.
The spirit was whizzing on him, did you say?
Yes, it whizzed right on his leg, Dave.
Wow,
and curiously enough, yeah, well, Tony didn't feel it. So evidently, you know, when it's raining in the ballpark, he stands out there during the delay. Who knew?
Is that what you would really call an EVP?
That's exactly what it was. Yeah.
Shut up, Dave. All right.
There. Tony says he was hearing noises and felt a presence, but had no idea what had happened until his team pointed it out. Steve Wesson filmed the footage earlier this month, but according to the stories, a married couple lived at the manor in the 1400s but dies of the plague. It's believed that they still haunt that cemetery. And that, according to the stories, why you don't hang out in graveyards at night. But Dave, sometimes we've been told different. What do you think? Is it a ghost in the graveyard or a trick of the camera?
I don't know. Have you seen the video yourself? What do you think?
I looked at it just briefly. It's intriguing. I tend to be a little skeptical of most videos. So yeah. I will pass on this one and say maybe they were fortunate to catch something that might look like what they wanted to look like.
All right. Well, I'll take your cynical approach any day on this one, Tim. I didn't see in the video. It just didn't. Again, I think it might be a play of light, but I could be wrong.
Yeah.
I could be wrong. All right. Where are we going to go next?
Well, we go on to another haunting story having to do with a ghost in a dance studio mirror. The internet's divided over whether it is a ghost or not. A video showing what is thought to be a ghost in a dance studio mirror has left the internet divided after racking up about 4 million views posted to the Ghost, Paranormal, and Other Weird Worlds Facebook page. The poster asks a question, what do you guys think about this video? The black and white video shows a young woman practicing a dance routine in a studio with several mirrors around her. The girl decides to take a break and sit down on the floor while resting. Her reflection is seen in all the mirrors. Then creepily, what the viewer thinks is her reflection starts to stand up and turn around to face where the girl is sitting, with the girl completely unaware of what's happening. She starts to see the reflection in another mirror and in disbelief quickly walks away from the area. It's not clear where this video is from. The clip has proven too hard for people to believe the footage, with many labeling it, of course, a fake. One Facebook user said, fake! Look at the details when she goes closely to the corner. The first one, she didn't have a reflection, and then all of a sudden she has one. However, some have suggested people might be in denial because they would be too scared if it was real. One person wrote, y'all gonna be more scared of it. That's what they wrote.
What?
Y'all gonna be more scared of it.
Y'all gonna be more scared of it. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Someone else wrote, this is as real as it gets.
Yeah, y'all.
Yeah. I like the person who just wrote, y'all gonna be more scared of it.
That makes no sense. People
it
need
doesn't.
To just get offline.
Yeah.
Learn
but
to communicate once more.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? LOL?
Yeah.
LMAO, Tim. LMAO.
Y'all gonna learn how to write. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's,
or something.
That's the name of that tune.
All right. What's our next
that's
journey?
The name of that story. Well, Dave, shockingly, and I use the term tongue-in-cheek, we move on to the world of aliens. Proof of aliens or another hoax, a conspiracy theorist out there claim they have found a three-fingered mummified humanoid with elongated skull in a South American cave.
Yeah, I've seen
this. And, of
this.
Course, if they... Yeah, and
I mean, personally... Not personally.
I'm
on record saying that, yeah.
Okay. I'm about to butcher South American names, so for all our South American friends out there, sorry. a group of self-proclaimed, I'll butcher that one first, paranormal researchers
You're having
claim
trouble
they
with
have,
the words you actually know, Tim.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Claim they have found proof of aliens near the city of, I believe it's Nazca in Peru.
Nazca, like the Nazca Lions, Tim.
Yeah, Nazca.
Yeah,
Nisca,
let's call
Nisca.
The whole thing off, yeah.
Right. The team say they found a mysterious three-fingered mummified humanoid with an elongated skull.
Hmm.
But not everyone is convinced of the finding, and one UFO expert said that this is simply a plaster cast model. In a short documentary on the bizarre find, Dr. Konstantin Korotkov, that's got to be careful with the name there. A professor at St. Petersburg University says that these features are not a deformity, but that the individual is another creature and another humanoid. The body was found covered in white powder. It was probably drywall, Dave. That's a flashback to True Crime Tuesday, which we forget it.
Yeah.
That's
tomorrow, Tim.
I know.
You're foreshadowing with time travel. Don't mess with people's minds like that.
I am, yes. The body was found covered in white powder, which the team say was used to preserve the remains. They claim that carbon dating samples of the body dates between 245 and 410 AD, though the validity of these tests has not yet been verified. Writing for conspiracy theory website Ancient Origins, anthropologist Alicia McDermott said, open-minded scientists studying human origins may have find themselves in a situation where they have to identify this surprising discovery as true, probable, or a false find. It is important in these situations to remain curious yet skeptical. We should keep an open mind yet stay apprehensive about jumping to conclusions on new discoveries, even if they seem incredible at first. Despite the excitement among conspiracy theorists around the new find, there may be a more simple explanation, Leading UFO expert Nigel Watson, author of Haynes UFO Investigations Manual, told Mail Online, "I'm no expert on ancient mummified bodies, but they tend to be more leatherish looking. This seems to be a plaster cast over a bone structure with three fingers attached to the hands. Such hoaxes are the product of wishful thinking mixed with greed and a lust for publicity. The more exotic the claim, the more viewers they generate. And so we get ever more bizarre revelations about alien corpses, flying saucer wreckage, and messages from our alien masters." And it's not just the mummy itself that has raised eyebrows among skeptics. Just 1 second here. Jamie Mawson, an ex-investigative journalist who is infamous for his involvement in several high-profile UFO hoaxes, was part of the Peruvian mummy team. I believe they're also part of a racing team as well. I don't know why Peruvian mummy team to me sounds like it could be involved in NASCAR.
Not to me, it sounds like a wrestling gig. I don't
know. The Peruvian mummy team?
Yeah.
In May of 2015, he promoted photographic slides claiming to be pictures of an alien recovered from the Roswell flying saucer crash of 1947. They were revealed to the world at a conference in Mexico where he charged £15 or $20 for people to watch a live video stream of the event. The slides were said to have been thoroughly researched, yet they were soon discovered to be pictures of a mummy in a museum exhibition. Jamie Mawson is famous for promoting dodgy UFO videos and alien artifacts, Mr. Watson said. He has cried wolf too often to ever be taken seriously by anyone with at least one functioning brain cell. That's a quote.
Wow. Don't hold back. How do you really feel?
I know, right? Jeez. I, Dave, have a theory on this particular alien. Mm-hmm, that they have three fingers, there's a very simple name for these aliens, and we call them the Shockers.
Mm-hmm. You're a horrible human being. Horrible,
why do you say that?
Horrible human being.
Well, I mean, it's they simply look shocking, Dave, when you look at them. Mm-hmm. That's why we call them Shockers.
Yeah, so. That's why.
Yeah,
I don't think so, but nice try. Nope.
Oh, no.
All right, where are we going next?
Well, let's go back to the world of Hollywood and comedy. You know, there's nothing funnier, Dave. Nothing funnier than a buddy cop comedy with a supernatural twist. It's set to air on Fox's Fall Sunday lineup.
Wait a minute, didn't they try that already? Wasn't there a movie with Jeff Bridges and somebody else where they tried this buddy cop paranormal comedy movie and it did not go well?
I think so. I'm not sure. I think I avoided it like the plague. Yeah.
Right.
A new single camera comedy series is coming to Fox Sundays in the upcoming 2017-18 fall television schedule. And it aims to more than just make its audiences laugh. Oh yes, you two can get rid of your Sunday dinner. No, I'm kidding. I made that part up. It's created by Tom Gormican, and the series is called Ghosted. It brings together the utterly mismatched duo of Leroy, played by Craig Robinson. I like him. He's actually funny.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Cynical skeptic, and Max Adam, played by Adam Scott, a genius true believer in the paranormal, to work for a secret government agency that looks into the increasing amount of unexplained activities in Los Angeles. But there's really more to it than what meets the eye. Although it seems to be going for the usual case of the week format of each investigation into the paranormal mysteries, will eventually lead to the subsequent discovery of larger ones that could threaten the very existence of humankind. The official trailer for this series further reveals that the two of them have been recruited by force for reasons that have not been revealed. The two of them are taken to a secret facility and are later on briefed on their new task as paranormal investigators for an organization known as the Bureau Underground. In one scene, a woman in white who introduces herself as Captain Lefray, played by Ali Walker, even told them that the fate of the human race now lies in their hands.
That's the best way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But how much hope can humanity have in a disgraced cop like Leroy and an ostracized college professor like Max? Well, although the trailer shows them fumbling through their cases, constantly questioning the strange and screaming at most inappropriate times, actors Robinson and Scott reportedly have great chemistry, as claimed by a first impression review on TV Line. Leroy and Max's paranormal nerd and skeptical sleuth tandem has a Beverly Hills Cop feel to it. And along with other staff members populating the bureau, Ghosted promises a fun-filled soiree into supernatural comedy that goes way beyond the things that go bump in the night. No definitive release date is out yet, but Ghosted has already been scheduled to air on the Fox's Sunday lineup at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time, competing with NBC's Sunday Night Football. No, it won't get cream there. And fellow newcomers, Wisdom of the Crowd on CBS and To Tell the Truth on ABC. So there you go.
I'm interested. Let's see how it pans out. That could be really cool.
I mean, the cast is, it seems good, but it seems like with every one of these paranormal comedies, they come out with them, and you know what? They kind of fall on their face.
Yeah, well, we'll see. But these guys, I like both of them. I think they're funny guys.
Yeah.
And if it's written right, who knows? Let's hope something good comes from it, because it'd be good to see some entertaining fun value out there as well.
Yeah, very true, very true.
Very true. Thanks, Peter Brady.
Yeah, well, you know, the old voice gets a little tired after a while.
Yeah.
I'm not as young as I used to be.
None of us are.
Secret British X-File reveals how the Royal Air Force pilots were told to ignore UFO over... Is it Skagness, Dave? You tell me. You get in trouble for this.
Sure. Okay. Skagness it is.
Skagness, mm-hmm. Skagness, Skugness.
Mm-hmm. Let's call the whole thing off. Yeah.
Piss off as many people in Europe as I can tonight. It's the moment UFO fans have been waiting for. You've been on pins and needles, kids. A mysterious set of files referred to as the Britain's X-Files have been opened up to the public this past week. Conspiracy fans are getting hot under the collar about one which throws light on a very strange incident from 1996 where the Royal Air Force was told to ignore a UFO sighting on radar. Naturally, this has gotten conspiracy fans foaming at the mouth at the thought of a government cover-up, although it's not quite as exciting as it seems. Bright lights were seen on the morning of the 5th of October, 1996, by several civilians at the same time as a radar signal was detected, but the RAF did not respond. A government official whose name is blacked out wrote to the Ministry of Defense saying the RAF is supposed to, or so I believed, to be keeping a watchful eye on the activity in the UK, but seemed to have no idea what is going on. Do they have a standard procedure for these incidents? They had enough time to think about it because the object was on our radar for upwards of 7 hours, he said. While I'm interested in finding out what was seen, my primary concern stems from the absolute shambles that such events seem to cause. But it might not be quite as exciting as it seems, according to Nigel Watson, author of the UFO Investigations Manual. That's twice I've mentioned him now. I should get some sort of payment from him, Dave. Watson says this is not new information, as the case became public in a batch of Ministry of Defense files released in 2010. The radar signals were explained in an RAF report as being produced by St. Botolph's 273-feet-tall church spire in Boston, Lincolnshire. The report said the church spire is known in aviation circles as the Boston Stump, which is also the nickname of Larry Bird. Kidding. And appears occasionally.
That's not what I've heard.
Just pissed off all my Massachusetts friends. And appears occasionally on some radars in certain radar propagation conditions. The lights in the wash area were observed from three separate locations high above the horizon and in the same general direction, but without corroborating radar data. No associated air vehicle was detected by civil or military radars. This suggests a distant celestial source. These celestial sources were identified as Venus by the Royal Greenwich Observatory, and the stars Sirius and Vega were also regarded as culprits. So there you be.
All right. Interesting stuff. What? Yeah, I like how Venus is a culprit. I still have a hard time understanding how people misunderstand a stationary planet as a UFO.
I don't know. She's your Venus, she's your fire, show some desire, damn it.
I will. All right, where are we going next?
That's all I got there. Final story for tonight.
Uh-huh.
Here's your dream job if you've been looking for it. Say you're lost out there and you just say to yourself, self, I need a new job. I need something where I can strive, where I can make some money, and also just kind of wrap my arms around my chosen profession, something that I can really get behind. Well, a family is seeking a nanny for their children. The catch, it's in a haunted house.
What?
Well, it's in a haunted house, Dave, but other than that, you know, it's good times. Sure. Good times, good kids, you know, it's a great environment. I'm sure the food's nice, you know, and good salary. Five nannies have left the role, by the way, in the last year. Don't mind that, though. Each citing supernatural incidents as the reason. Oh, sure, they might be a little fraidy cats. You, though, you're brave. Hey, you. Yes, you. You over there. Are you looking to make some easy cash fast? Well, boy, we got the gig for you.
I'll take it.
All right, you got it.
Beach Radio.
Yeah, it does. It probably pays more, too.
Uh-huh.
These parents in Scotland are looking for a live-in nanny. Notice I said nanny with an N.
Can't that be a nanny?
Well, it could be a nanny, I guess. Yeah. To mind their two children. Only two kids, Dave. Jeez, this is a walk in the park.
I could do that sound asleep.
Right? And their haunted house. There's cats there. That's right. You can earn about 50,000 euros or about $55,000 a year. Easy, Dave.
What?
All you have to do is, all you have to do is move to Scotland.
I'll do it. Sign me up. There's nothing I'm more excited about doing than raising up some good Scottish children and making $55,000 doing it, Tim, in a haunted castle.
You also got to make breakfast and not get it from that Scottish restaurant McDonald's.
I can whip up Scottish breakfast. It's haggis, which I'm pretty sure is just the stuff you pick out from between your teeth wrapped in cheese. So I'm good for that.
Okay, so you got breakfast down.
Breakfast
you got to
do.
You got to get the kids ready for school.
I could do that. Okay. I'm good at that. I can even read them books.
Oh, wow. You got to drop them off and pick them up from school. And you assist after school, including helping them with homework.
That's fine.
And getting them ready for bed. Sure. Dave. Okay. Sure. Also, you have to watch out for supernatural incidents, including strange noises, broken glass, and furniture moving.
Hmm. All right. Not a problem. Again, I've got seven children. That just happens on a natural day.
There you go.
Okay.
With 28 days off per year. That's right. You get 28 days off per year.
Hey, that, you know
you
what?
Really,
that's 27 more than I get now, so I'll take it.
That's right. You really have got to love the life of luxury in this whole job. You'll be provided with your own comfortable room with, you've got an in-suite bathroom and private kitchen.
Holy cow.
The family writes.
Getting better and better.
I know. All that's required of you is a good head on your shoulders and a sense of commitment.
Damn it.
Oh, Dave.
Damn it. That's where the line gets drawn. Dave. Good head on my shoulders and a sense of commitment. I should be committed. Yeah. Does that count?
That pretty much fills the role right there. Five nannies have left the role, by the way, in the last year, each citing supernatural incidents as the reason. Does it sound like the perfect fit for you, this whole deal? Perfect fit for you? You got to act fast. According to the article, we are keen to find the perfect long-term nanny. So if you'd like to be considered for this rewarding and exciting position, please do get in touch with us, the family asks. You can connect with them on childcare.co.uk.
Childcare.co.uk. There's no reason now for you people to say you can't find a job. This guy's begging you to take the gig.
Right. 55 grand a year, U.S., 50,000 euros a year.
That's pretty good money. I know people that went to college for 4, 5, 6 years, and they're in their profession, and they're not making that kind of money.
Right. Huh. Taking care of two little brats, give them some breakfast, shuffle them off to school and back, help them with a little homework. You don't even have to give them right answers. I mean,
And that's it for this week, folks. For Supernatural News, it's time now to open the mailbag. We'll do that when we return to the best in Paranormal Talk Radio. This is Beyond the Darkness.
Beyond the Darkness.
Welcome back to the best in paranormal talk radio. Tim, you've got something exciting going on the end of this week. What are you doing and how can people come meet you?
Boy, do I ever, Dave. Independent Wrestling International. I'll get the name right. It's IWI. I just always call it IWI. It's our season finale at the Mounds Theater, Dave. We take the rest of the summer off, but we're ending it with a bang. And first ever, Dave, as far as I know for IWI, first ever tag team ladder match finale and main event. And we've got two teams that are absolutely going to absolutely tear the house down on Saturday night, this coming Saturday, July 8th. It's Lucha Extreme versus the YOLO Bros, who are your IWI tag champs. Basically, what we're doing is we're going to suspend two tag team championship belts above the ring. We're going to let these four guys go at it with ladders, and it's going to be amazing.
Wait, now, are they beating each other with these ladders, or are they using ladders to climb up and get the belts?
Exactly. You got it.
But a little bit of both? They get to beat and climb? This is an amazing
exactly.
feat.
Exactly. You can. You can use the ladders against each other. You can use the ladders to eventually get up and get those belts. It's anything goes. It's a no disqualification ladder match in which you can use the ladders as a weapon. You can use those ladders to get those belts. Tickets are available right now at a discount online at moundstheater.org. Otherwise, at the door, they're $12 for adults, $8 for kids. We encourage you to get those tickets now. Get them now because they're going to be – this show is going to be sold out. We start at 7:30. That's bell time. Doors open at 6:45. We're going to have a full house. And, again, in September when we open up, Dave, when we do our season opener in September – we have, I know you've never heard of her before, but we have a special women's match with Blue Pants from WWE's NXT product. She's going to be our special guest in September. Blue Pants, that's her name.
I'll be there.
There you go. So Blue Pants will be with us in September. But this Saturday, July 8th, I sit there and I say to myself, I don't know how many times in the Minnesota Indies that they've done a ladder match or had the amount of ceiling that we have in the Mounds Theater to do a ladder match, much less a tag team ladder match. And with the performers that we have doing this ladder match, it is going to be something special. So if you want to see something special on Saturday night, this tag team ladder match is going to be something else. Get your tickets right now, moundstheater.org.
All right, that's it. Quick mentions on that. I do want to do one thing before we go into Parashare, Tim. And I know I'm going to sideline you with this or blindside you, however you want to look at it.
Sure.
I just want to do approach. You know, 99.9% of our audience is remarkable. Mm-hmm. They're fun. They're interesting. Even when they disagree with us or our topics, it's always great to engage with them.
Sure.
You received a couple of emails that really have me pissed off. And I just wanted to address this personally. If you listen to our show and don't like us, that's fine. If you don't like the approach, that's fine. If you don't like us individually, that's fine. Tim has been dealing with medical issues for better part of almost a year here, in and out of hospitals, dealing with things, and he is still here doing what he can and producing the show from hospital beds. And we have received some just nasty-ass email that have been sent to Tim. If you've got that cruel a heart, just don't even bother to email. Just turn off our show. I don't want you listening. I don't need you in my world. As a matter of fact, I don't want you in our world, period. So just knock it off. If you've got the balls, and you're lucky I don't post these email addresses, because I've looked a couple of you morons up, and it'd be real easy to flood your email box with all of our listeners telling you what a schmuck you really are. But don't do that. Don't be an ass. It's ridiculous. For you to say hateful things to Tim while he's dealing with medical issues, and what was the one that really pissed me off, Tim? Not even a written email. All it was a subject line saying, "Get what was it?"
It was derogatory. Something about get well soon, fat boy, or something like that. I don't know. It was just,
why say that? Your parents didn't teach you any common manners. If you don't have anything nice to say, shut up.
You know, here's my thing. And maybe it's because I've been playing a bad guy in wrestling for too long, but it kind of rolls off my back a little bit too. I guess I developed a little bit of a thick skin, and I understand where you come from, and I do appreciate it too. But
I understand that, but it's still the aspect of people have to stand up. You can't just let morons continually flood with vitriol and hatred. And if that's all you've got in you, just get out of the world. Get out of our world. Get out of the world. Nobody needs your nastiness and negativity. Just be done with it. And if you thought that was a funny remark, that you were trying to jibe him, and you don't know Tim. First of all, if you were his friend and you were calling him fat boy, I'd expect him to punch you in the mouth. Second of all, You don't know him. You don't know me. Show some respect for strangers. My God, we are in a creepy-ass part of our history, man, where people just take no responsibility for their actions or the way they do it. Here's a simple rule of thumb. Before you hit send, read that and imagine if you were a stranger about to read this, would you come off like an asshole and a psycho? If so, then don't send it. That's a simple little rule of thumb. I don't care if you take shots at the show or the guests or what you don't like about the show. That's your welcome and your prerogative. But don't be taking personal shots at Tim because of his medical conditions. That's just, it's inexcusable. I won't put up with it. And if you do it again, I can guarantee you I will be publishing each one of your emails and your email addresses to our loving audience, and we'll let them handle you going forward. That's all I'm going to say about that. Let's get into some of the Parashare stories we've got going here, Tim.
Okay.
Here's one that's really interesting. It's referring to this recent Theater of the Mind from last Friday. It says, I have to say, this last Theater of the Mind creeped me out about the officer and the possessed girl. Yeah, it did me, too. When I was reading that story, man, I kept getting the willies throughout that entire thing. Could you imagine being a cop? You get called in thinking it's a regular domestic dispute.
Yeah, it is unnerving. Yeah.
Guy's voice is barking out of a little girl, and yeah, it's yeah, that was creepy. And the fact that, you know, I know adrenaline is one thing, and you can be strong, but bouncing 3-4 cops around, and you're like a 12. How old was the little girl? 10 or 12 or something like that. It said in the story.
Yeah.
Yikes. Yeah, that's weird. And I've got police friends around the United States. I've heard from a few saying they've had similar situations where they've had to take somebody down much smaller than them that are acting otherworldly. And they've even questioned, what the hell am I doing in this job? This is not what I was hired to do. You know, it's one thing when you got to go after a drunk or somebody on weed or, you know, doing something stupid. But when they're like, blah, blah, blah.
there's always the one
walls and flipping people around. It's time to maybe think about becoming a postman.
There's always the one point when I'm editing or putting in effects in Theater of the Mind where I think, okay, there's one point always in the story where I think, am I going one step too far with an effect? But then I always add it because I think this is the one point where it's going to hammer it home. And there's a point in the story where after she kicks the officer between the legs and then says something about it's so easy, and the other officer comes up from behind and hits her and knocks her out, and then they wheel her out on the gurney. You hear her punch her in the back of the head or whatever it is to lay her out.
Right.
And it was actually putting in the effect of punching her and her dropping to the floor. And I thought, was that too much?
Well, the sound effect was not too much, but the fact that you kept punching your mom in the back of the head to get that sound right, that might have been stepping over the boundaries.
You know what? She had it coming, because I asked for certain foods while I was ill, Dave, and it was like, you know what? You're so needy. And I said, you know what,
Mom? Don't ever say your mom had it coming, Tim. That's bad
form. I know.
Form.
I'm kidding. I'm joking. I love my mom. Yeah, but she can take a punch. She's very tough.
She can. Let's get back to the letter. I have to say this. This last Theater of the Mind creeped me out about the officer and the possessed girl. I had a very similar experience serving as a Mormon missionary in Denver, Colorado in July of 2000. We, myself and the missionary companion, got a call to a family's house asking if we could bless their 12-year-old daughter because she had been acting very weird. So we went to their home, not sure what to expect. We knocked on the door, and a young man about the age of 16 answered the door and asked us to come in. Mind you, it's July, very warm outside, but as soon as we entered the house, it was like an Arctic blast hit us. It was very dark inside the house, even with all the curtains and blinds open. The air was so heavy and thick, you could feel something was not right at all. The mother and father thanked us for coming and didn't know who else to call. They were not members of our church, but had a family friend that told them that we could come and help. We had no idea what we got ourselves into. They guided us to the family room where the daughter was. She was about 4'9" and probably didn't even weigh 95 pounds fully clothed and soaking wet. She was just sitting in a chair in the middle of the room looking down. We asked her if she was okay, and we got no reply. Yeah, Tim, that's a time you just turn tail and leave. I've seen enough horror movies to know that's not going to end well.
Right.
She would not even acknowledge that we were there with her. She just had this blank look on her face. We ask the parents if we could give her a blessing. This entails us to put our hands on her head and say a special prayer by the power of God. They gave us permission to do so. As we laid our hands on her head, I began to give her the blessing. At the very beginning of the prayer, I barely said, "Dear Heavenly Father," and the girl opened her mouth. What we heard, what sounded like 1,000 different voices yelling at us. They were saying, "We know you, Ryan." They said my full name. "You're not worthy to do this blessing. We know about that Playboy magazine you stole from your neighbor's house when you were a kid. We know about what you and your girlfriend did. Your car in the woods." That was several years before that, and the voices started going on and on about my companion and what he had done. He did things in his past that were crazy. There was no way this girl knew my full name or anything about my past. It looked at us a bit like, and we started over again. We began the prayer, and then she jumps out of her chair, picks me up with one hand, and throws me across the room. At that time, I was around 300 pounds, standing 6 feet tall. She tossed me around like I was a leaf in the wind. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe this at all. I got back up and asked her parents and her brother if they could hold her down while we did the blessing. It took all three of them, and me and my companion holding her down to keep her on that chair. We continued the prayer. All throughout the blessing, the voices were yelling and screaming, trying to distract us and saying all kinds of horrible things about us, our families, her parents, her brother, trying desperately to distract us and to get us to stop. About an hour of doing the prayer, all of this touching her, all of us touching her, felt this thickness in the air just lift from her body and leave through the ceiling. She went limp in the chair. Her poor parents thought she was dead, but she was still alive. They took her to the hospital where she was treated for dehydration. We went and visited her at the hospital the next day to check on her. She said she couldn't remember what happened. She said her last memory was talking on the phone with her girlfriend and that they were, and then she was in the hospital. We asked if she had any idea how this happened, and she said she told us a story about a week before she had spent the night at her friend's house. And they had found a Ouija board under the friend's bunk bed. Still waiting for your bunk bed stories, Dave. Well, here's another one, right? And they started playing. She recalled that they were contacted by a little girl spirit who was murdered in the house about 25 years before, and she wanted their help in solving her case and finding the man who did it. According to this, the spirit according to this spirit, the only way for her to enter the girl's body so they could see what happened. So the 12-year-old agreed to do it if nothing happened after that. The board stopped, so they went to bed. The 12-year-old said she would have moments of lost time over the next few days and would wake up, places she never had been to before and such. She called her friend to ask if she had the same issues, and that was that. The whole experience really opened my eyes. I saw the power of evil in this girl, but I also saw the power of God in full force and how it prevailed. Love your podcasts. Keep going strong. And that's from Ryan. Yikes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you keep doing that missionary work or do you take a job at Stuckey's or
I think Wendy's? There's times you need that Stuckey's break. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you need to. Yeah, there's times you need to get away for a while and regain your sanity.
Hey, Dave and Tim, it's Jimmy of Banning. Thanks for playing my paranormal story on Parashare episode 118. I know that you two get overloaded on emails, and I feel special that you chose mine. Okay, the second part of my paranormal experience, my grandma fell out of her bed in the middle of the night and passed away, and my little sister found her in the morning before any of us woke up. About 2 months later, I moved into the room she passed away in, and one late night, it was about 1 a.m, I turned out the light and was about to fall asleep when I felt someone sit on the bed in the dark. It freaked me out so bad I bolted out of bed, turned on the light, but no one was there. Needless to say, I did not sleep in there anymore. And you told my mother what happened, but I don't think, or I told my mother what happened, but I don't think she believed me. So, I have also seen a UFO and a specter. And it does not scare me. And all of my paranormal experiences happened after I had a near-death experience. I'm a big fan of your podcast and keep doing what you do. Sincerely, Jimmy of Banning. Sounds very regal in Knights of the Round Table. Sir Jimmy of Banning.
It does, doesn't it?
Excellent joust today, said Jimmy. Well done. All right, what have we got here? Another quick email. A little bit longer. Let's see. But it's nicely paragraphed and formatted. I like this. Can you hear the birds tweeting in the background, Tim? They're giving me a little sunny day feeling while we're doing some creepy stories.
It sounds like you're one with nature day, which is very unusual.
Indoor nature. Indoor nature. Yeah, okay. That's just the way it's got to be. Speaking of nature, be careful tomorrow. 4th of July, folks. Please be safe. Don't drink and drive. Enjoy the fireworks. Don't get too close. Make sure to wear mosquito netting, lots of sunblock. Just sit at home and watch it on TV where it's much safer. Dude, I'll read this next story in a minute. I saw one of the most terrifying things I've ever seen in my life. It was Roselle, Illinois. Mm-hmm. Actually, I don't remember if they were back-to-back years, but they were very close. While we were there, someone was shot. Some guy was off like about a quarter of a mile, eighth of a mile away, shooting at a barrel full of water in his backyard. One of the bullets missed, whistled through, and hit this guy in the crowd at the fireworks display.
Oh.
Luckily, he was standing next to, I think this guy was former military or former police officer. He recognized the sound. He heard the and saw the guy react. He knew immediately he'd been shot. So this guy, you gotta be careful when you're shooting guns. I mean, the guy thought he could shoot guns cause it was 4th of July and nobody would hear the bangs or they wouldn't question him. And, he missed the pail and that thing went like an eighth or a quarter of a mile or whatever and hit this guy and it almost killed him. Jeez. So yeah, I remember that was terrifying as hell. But then the one year we get there, Tim, and this may be why I'm just not much of a 4th of July kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
We get there and we're ready for this to begin, and they go to light off the beginning kind of prelude set on the ground. Something falls. They all start collapsing and exploding. And now every firework that's right there just starts boom, 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 boom. This thing went off like a finale, and it was all done in 5 minutes. The entire night, because it just started exploding everything. They're yelling for people to get the hell out of there. That scared the living beepers out of me, Tim. Beepers. Did you hear that?
Beepers. Yeah, I did. Beepers. Yeah.
It's me trying not to swear on the air, but.
I'm trying to remember what city I was in. It was a smaller city, and it was, I want to say it was in the 90s, and they went to fire off their municipal fireworks. And something had happened where they went to fire off one of the mortars and it got trapped in the tube and all the other mortars started firing off in their casings inside the cannons. So and of course it's done by the local fire department. And the reason being that it's done by the local municipal fire department is just for this purpose. Because if the mortars do go off in the cannons, of course, it can be extinguished by the local fire department. But only a few of them actually went up into the sky. But if you were lucky enough to be able to sit across the field from where they were firing them off, you got a hell of a show.
Yeah.
But it was not a safe show because all of a sudden you saw them come out with the foam and trying to put out these fireworks as they were going off in the cannons, and it was a scary sight.
Oh, I bet.
The fire department had everything under control, but for a moment there, I mean, everything was going off inside these cannons, and essentially they just had this announcement over the loudspeaker system that due to technical difficulties, the show's over, folks. Sorry about that. It won't be rescheduled, you know. It was very.
We don't have another $250,000 in the budget to blow off more fireworks this year.
Right. It was very, very Wally World. Show's over, folks. Nothing to see here. You know. Wow. Thanks for coming out. And it was just like, whoa. And I don't even remember what city I was in when that happened. It was a smaller city though, and it was just crazy. All of a sudden you heard boom, 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 and it sounded like bombs going off because the mortars were going off in their cannons. At the time, just scary.
Be careful out there, folks. Just stay home. You want fireworks? You know what's hilarious to me now? I've become so wussified, Tim. Did you used to play for hours with sparklers?
Oh, I played with bigger stuff than that.
I mean sparklers. I just want to talk about sparklers for a minute. Did you used to get like the super long ones so they'd burn forever?
Yes.
Right. Used to love sparklers. Running around playing with. And now I look at them and I'm like, God, our parents hated us. Those are just sparks of like burning hatred flying off of these things right towards our faces. We used to throw them at each other.
Well, if you remember, when we had them when we were kids, they were burning phosphorus on metal.
Right.
Now they're not so much metal. I think they're wood. They're burning phosphorus on wood so that they go out, if I remember right. Yeah. But when we had them, they were burning phosphorus on – and I think some of them are still metal. You can still get the metal. But that metal is red hot when it's done burning. So, I mean, you go and touch it even a minute or two after it's done burning, you can still burn yourself on it.
Yeah.
But, you know, your parents handed it to you like they're handing you a birthday candle. You blow up.
Go ahead, play with these. Yeah. And I'm like, no, I won't let my kids play with them. I know I'm the worst dad on planet Earth, but I realized what horrific things these things are. And let's face it, we do not always have the greatest luck, you and me. I just don't need sparks in eyes. That's just not where I need to be.
When I think of it, with the luck that I've had, in my grandfather, God rest his soul, used to go over to Wisconsin and get the illegal stuff.
Yeah.
So he would bring back like strings and strings of Black Cat firecrackers.
Sure.
And then he would teach me how exactly you could stuff all of these into a Pepsi can and then light them and watch the Pepsi can dance up into the air as they were going off.
Right.
And how you could do it without blowing your hand off.
Yeah.
I was a little pyro as a small child.
Those were the good old days, Tim. Those were the good old days.
Yeah.
Weird. Mm-hmm. All right. A couple more stories here. Hi, Dave and Tim. I've written to you guys plenty before, and I promise I'm not a stalker, but I just had to write again. I'm listening to the X-Files episode. I'm only a few minutes in, and I'm already enraged. As a scientist, I take great offense when a philosopher claims to be scientific, and that's in quotes. That's why I'm dropping my voice like that.
In
the same sentence as calling the paranormal BS, which is also in quotes. He claims that most of the things have been explained away. No, they haven't. As you well know, applying the scientific theory to the paranormal is almost impossible. You can't create paranormal activity in a lab.
A lab?
You can't get done in one of them there labs, Tim.
You can't do it in a lab, Dave.
It doesn't work on command, according to this. It says, I think that I am very skeptic when it comes to the paranormal. I'm also a scientist. However, I've had experiences that I cannot explain. Were they paranormal? I can't say. But there's no rational explanation for what happened. My first experience, well, I like that. He opens up, or she, I should say, sorry about that. She opens up talking about our guest that we had on the show.
Right.
You know, and I'd extended him. I want to make a quick mention. I had extended him an invitation to our event in Liberty, Missouri, coming up at the Belvoir Winery at the end of July. And I said,
punch him?
No, I said, why don't you come have your own experience? I think you'd enjoy it. And with the amount of angry hate mail I got about this guy, I told him, yeah, maybe you don't want to come. There are some people that do not like you. And I just think it'd be better if you didn't show up. And, you know, I'll take him on a private trip through there or something. But, yeah, I didn't want to put – you know, it's not fair to him. I don't want to put him through that either. I mean, he kind of opened himself up for a good old-fashioned ass-kicking by the way he acted. But – you know, he's human, and he admitted at the end that, you know, he spoke out of turn and has never even tried to experience ghosts or go to a haunted location, so he shouldn't be saying that. So I give him credit for that aspect of the story. Mm-hmm. All right, let's get back into this. Christina says, my first experience happened at Waverly Hills. As you know, the structure sits up on a hill and is gated with security. We had rented out the building for an investigation, so I decided to run an experiment. On the fourth floor, we set up cameras on either end of the hallway to monitor who was coming and going. We placed a recorder in the middle of the floor as to be visible to the camera. Myself and my husband, who I trust 100% not to fake anything, sat at the opposite end of the hallway as to make sure no one interfered. The rest of the team stayed quiet and base camp two floors down. We did this experiment for roughly an hour. When we got back home to review the audio, I was floored. We captured door slams, screaming, and the sound of something being dragged down the hall. The screams were not far away. They sounded right on the floor close to the recorder. So, I'm pretty darn sure it wasn't kids screaming in the next town or something. The door slams were not in the distance. It sounded like big, heavy doors opening and closing. The thing that kills me is that on that floor, there are no doors to any of the rooms. I was blown away. I couldn't explain it. The cameras confirmed no one ever came on that floor. That experience really started to open up my mind. The second experience happened at an abandoned resort. I might have written about this before, but this is another one that is burned into my brain. This place is massive and has quite a history. It was designed by Thomas Jefferson. Also, my husband and his friends had their first experience there at the ripe old age of 16. And roughly 10 years later, we went back. We got permission from the owners to be there, who happened to also live on property. They chained us in. It was some Ghost Adventures lockdown type stuff. The whole place just gave me an uneasy feeling, especially the basement. I decided to face my fears and go down to investigate the basement. It was just myself, my good friend Kathy, and our friend Thad. Is it Thad or Tad? T-H-A-D.
Might be Tad.
Okay.
Even with the T-H.
I'm going to say Thad anyway, because that's a Thad-ass name right there. I had this huge flashlight. We joked and called it my security blanket. Seriously, this thing could light up the sky. I was leading the pack and just scanning my flashlight back and forth, scared to death. Katie was behind me with the camera, and Thad was behind her. We entered into this large common area on the camera. You can see my flashlight scan the left and then to the right. When it hits the right wall, it illuminates this closet that is open. I scan to the left and back to the right, and there, standing in the closet, is a freaking shadow figure. As we get closer, you can see the thing actually move back into the closet to hide on camera. None of us react. We just walk right on by. When I saw the footage, I was stunned. I was scanning that basement like a hawk because I was terrified, and I passed within inches of a shadow figure and never once saw it. We went back to the property to make sure nothing was in that closet, like a broom or cleaning supplies, and it was empty. We asked the owners if they used it, and they said all the renovation work took place on the upper floors. We showed this video to the people, like John Zaffis, who confirmed that it was an odd piece of video, and most likely a shadow figure. Science can't explain it. I can't explain it. And yet, there it is. It exists. My third experience happened at the West Virginia State Prison in Moundsville, West Virginia. I was in a maximum security with my husband, and no one else was in the area. We had another team member stand at the entrance to act as guard. I went into one of the cells, shut the door, and my husband walked up and down the block pretending to be a prison guard. Side note, his father used to work there, so we thought that might stir the energy up. I sat quietly in my cell while my husband asked questions. Now keep in mind, I never introduced myself. My husband said who he was. He was related to stir things up. Upon review of the recorder, you can hear clear as day something say my name in this kind of long sounding tone, like the person was struggling. We reviewed it countless times, had people listen to it, obviously not telling them what we think, and every single person says, it's my name. I was alone in the cell. The only person who knew my name was my husband, and he was talking. You can hear him over the EVP asking a question. Once again, to me, this is unexplainable. Anyway, this was one hell of a rant, and I have tons more of experiences I can't explain, like the thermal video of someone sitting in an abandoned Ferris wheel at the top of an old abandoned amusement park. By the way, the Ghost Adventures crew need to check out Lake Shawnee in West Virginia. That place was crazy. Well, that's enough for now. Thank you for doing what you do, and I can't wait to hear the rest of this episode. Hope you give it to them. And that comes from Christina in Elko, Nevada. No, I'm sorry. You're probably disappointed I didn't beat him up. But we had a good verbal sparring and conversation, and I thought it went fine that way. I don't know that I necessarily had to get any rougher with him.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and you're right about one thing. Yeah, you can't recreate the paranormal in a lab. That's part of the issue, and that's part of I guess where he's coming from as well, that it's not provable. But let's play devil's advocate for a minute here, Dave. Knowing that he did come into the interview incredibly confident, maybe a little too confident and a little overconfident, but you gotta keep in mind that he also comes onto other shows with the idea that he's got maybe, unlike our show where he's got unlimited time to state his case, he might have 10 minutes in which he needs to defend his book or defend his case. And a lot of times you may get a smarmy interviewer who attacks him right away, not realizing that he's coming into a friendly format where we're wanting to have a friendly discussion and wanting to flesh out his point of view. he's probably coming in thinking this is an ordinary radio interview or an ordinary TV interview where he comes in, he's going to be attacked. So, of course, he comes off smarmy. Of course, he comes off cocky. And, of course, he's going to come off as, well, there's no such thing, good night, and gives you the abridged version. And it becomes inflammatory. So you guys got the inflammatory version of his or a microcosm of his right. his outlook or what was in that book. And, you know, he did, like Dave said, he did backtrack a little bit at the end of the interview. And Dave played that snippet as well of the after interview where he did admit that, hey, you know what, I never have gone out seeking this stuff and I never have. You know, had that experience.
I love some of the emails I got. People were like, hey, I love the episode. Although you were wrong on many of your points as well, you still said them more confidently and better than the guest.
That's true. That was the other part of it, too, was, you know, when you do interviews in 10-minute snippets, I think a lot like he does, you don't have to flesh out hour-long arguments for what it is right. You're doing, so you don't have to be real articulate about it. You know, you just have to spit out bullet points and you're done. So I don't think he had to formulate a real long argument, right. And it kind of petered out.
But I just thought it was fun that the people that loved or hated the episode thought it was great that I challenged him and I threw out bits, and they're like, and the funny thing right. was, as a scientist and a philosopher, you weren't even quoting, you weren't even giving necessarily the right information, but he couldn't challenge you back. Because he didn't know how to not challenge. So it was interesting. Yeah. It was a fun interview. And if you didn't listen or you only listen to part of it, go back and listen to the whole thing. I think you'll really enjoy it. And I think it's something different than what you're used to. So give yourself the chance to listen to the whole thing, because I think you can learn even from people that you might not like. And I had a lot of people tell me I turned off, you know, because he starts off, I think, the first 10 minutes calling everything in the paranormal bullshit. And it's literally might have even been right in the first 5 minutes. And a lot of people just tuned out after that. And I think they missed a better point to the whole story. And I'm not just trying to get myself patted on the back here, but I think it was a fun conversation and a back and forth. And I think it was kind of neat to see somebody who wrote numerous books, has stood his principles his way, kind of go back on his heels and realize, oh, there might be more ways to look at this than what I'm right. saying. So
yeah. It's funny because sometimes the most interesting interviews to listen to are the ones that do start out against your point of view or inflammatory or kind of butting heads, because they do smooth out eventually. If you get, and again, I'm not, I guess, stroking your ego here, but a good interviewer will take that inflammatory interview and go, well, wait a minute, I'm going to take and dissect this guy and figure out why he thinks this way.
Well, and then maybe try
and change him.
I'm going to give credit where credit's due, because Tim and I were incommunicado during that interview. And I texted Tim 5 minutes in and I said, oh, this is going to be a fun interview. I think I'm going to just dump this guy. We're 5 minutes in. He's already saying that everything we believe in and anything else everybody else believes in is BS. And Tim encouraged me to keep going. And he said, no, man, don't let him off the hook. Push him politely. Do it your way. Keep him on task and see what's going. And you took me out of, like, I was very close right at the beginning. And I'm sure if you re-listen to it, you can hear me. I have that sound in my voice like, all right, this is enough of this. And had you not talked me out of that, I think that interview would have never aired.
Mm-hmm.
It would have been 10 minutes of one and done, and it would have been very I don't think it would have ended nicely, but you talked me into trying to keep it afloat and see what comes of it. And I'm glad I did. I'm glad I took your advice on that. And you, cooler head prevailed. Now, I had been on, I think that was like my third episode I'd recorded that day, so I was about ready to be done with that kind of attitude anyway. But I'm glad I stuck to it. And he was a very nice man. I don't think he was ready for a real paranormal show to go at.
Right.
I don't think he was prepared that we were going to be as well versed as we were in a lot of the ideas and philosophies, but it was a fun show. Let's get two more stories in real quick and I'll have to wrap up. Hey, Darkness Dave and Twilight Tim. My name is Alex. I'm a big fan of your podcast and have been listening since the first one was uploaded on iTunes. I have an alien encounter story I'd like to share with you. However, it's a third hand story, so I hope that's okay. I've been tossing it around in my head since I heard it and wanted your insight on it, as you guys are more of an authority on the subject more than I. The other week, my dad went to his high school reunion. He saw one of his old buddies he hadn't seen for decades, and they got to chatting. My dad asked him all of the obvious class reunion questions, and his friend told him he works in the National Forestry Service. Now, my dad is one who fostered my interest in the paranormal, so I assure you, he was serious when he asked him, "Have you had any Bigfoot encounters or found any tracks?" His friend replied, "In all the years I've been in the Forestry Service, I've never seen any sign of Bigfoot, but I did have a UFO encounter once." Now, obviously, my dad pressed for details. His encounter follows as my dad related to me. Sometime during the 1970s, Dad couldn't recall the exact year, this guy and three other rangers were stationed in a national park in Montana. They were in a forestry department vehicle in a deep park part of the park that the public doesn't venture into. It was deep woods, and on the trail ahead, he and his colleagues spotted a group of strange-looking people who looked human, but at the same time didn't. They had white hair, and he described their skin as reddish, like they had really bad sunburns, and wearing silvery suits. They must be like a sale on silvery suits for aliens, Tim. They love that silvery suit deal.
The two, I think it was a disco thing, yeah.
The two groups met eyes. Oh, please tell me the story ends with a dance-off. Please tell me this is like alien sharks versus human jets. Let me see what it says here. The two groups met eyes, but these beings did not flag down the rangers like stranded tourists will, but trudged back into the woods, and their vehicle drove up to where they had been. The next day, the group of four rangers were tasked at surveying a cliff in the same general area of the park. As they got to the clearing by this cliff, all of them saw a huge cigar-shaped craft in the sky. It shot a beam of light to the ground, pulls the same beings they had seen the day before up into the ship. When the last one was aboard, the ship took off at such a high rate of speed, he said it was like it blinked out of existence. My dad was pretty stunned, but one of the other classmates who had overheard the story, of course, started making fun of the poor guy, asking him what drugs he had been on, since it was the 70s and all. The ranger assured this guy and my dad that he'd never taken any drugs in his life, but the other guy couldn't stop cracking jokes, so the ranger stopped talking about the incident, and my dad couldn't get any more information. When my dad told me, I was kind of shaken, since this wasn't some yokel of Destination America. Ouch.
Howie.
Pardon me. But a real guy, sorry for coughing into the microphone, I'm very unprofessional, but a real guy my dad actually knew, who was a governmental employee. The description of the aliens really got me, since they weren't your stereotypical grays. The closest I could find to their description was that subsect of Nords with the white hair, but they're supposed to have fair skin, not red. Well, maybe they'd been out there all day and they got sunburned, and I don't mean that sarcastically. Maybe their skin isn't prepared for it, or, I don't know. The website that had a list of these aliens, and yes, I take it with a grain of salt, I promise, said that the Nords are sensitive to some wavelengths of light, so my thought was maybe that since he said they look severely sunburned, maybe they had become stranded here, and while they were waiting for a pickup, maybe their skin couldn't handle exposure to our sun, or maybe radiation burns from a disease, from a disabled ship that was that stranded them. Sorry for the long email. Like I said, I've been knocking the story around in my head and wanted to hear your thoughts. Keep up the great work. I recommend you to everyone who listens to me ramble about this stuff, and that comes from Alex. Hey, Alex, thank you very much. That's a cool story. I wish we knew more about it. I don't know. I've never heard of red aliens with white hair. It sounds like, you stumbled into a nudist colony in Florida, which is always filled with old naked people, Tim. Always old naked people.
It always is, yes.
All right, we've got one more story here. It says, just wanted to write you quickly and bring up this Aerosmith time slip. A lot of people I ask have a memory of Steven Tyler as not being the original lead singer, but no one can give a name of the original. Even I have a memory of Steven Tyler having replaced someone in the 80s. Go ahead, ask someone what they remember. I bet you get a lot of Steven Tyler is not the original. Love the show, and that comes from Matt. No, I remember Steven Tyler in the 70s. I remember him being the lead singer. And he had I think they had like a big falling out because of his alcohol and drug abuse, if I recall correctly.
Yep.
And then they stopped performing for a while, and I think they were just on the precipice of releasing Permanent Vacation, kind of their rebound album, and Run DMC connected with them.
Yeah. There's a common misconception as well, because a lot of the early, especially when you hear Dream On,
right,
it doesn't sound like Steven Tyler, because Steven Tyler had screamed his voice out So originally, his original voice is much more melodic. It actually is deeper. By the time you get to some of the later albums, he's got the more familiar scream to his voice. Right. He's not actually singing anymore. So a lot of people think, well, it was never Steven Tyler who was the original lead singer of Aerosmith, which is not true. He's always been the original lead singer.
Very cool. Look at that. Yeah. You learn something new. Ding, 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 ding. The more you know. Hi, Dave. I'm a huge fan. You and Tim get me through my workday every day. Just wanted to mention in regards to the recent Mothman sightings that have been occurring in and around Chicago, I started looking into this a bit more, and it's interesting to note that in February of this year, about a month before these sightings started to occur, there was a meteor that fell nearby. They believe that it actually fell in Lake Michigan, which is interesting since all of these sightings of the creature have been occurring on the east side of Chicago, which isn't far from Lake Michigan. And, in fact, one of the sightings occurred on Lake Michigan. Coincidence? I think not. The theory of the Mothman being alien in origin and theory of aliens and alien spacecraft being in the ocean and large bodies of water, I don't know. Seems like these things might be connected. Anyway, maybe I'll see you around sometime. I'm a member of the Twin Cities Paranormal Society, so I'm sure our paths will cross at some point. I hope anyway. Thanks. Until then, keep it weird. And that comes from Jen. Well, thank you, Jen, and thank you all for spending some time with us here. And remember, we'd love to hear from you. If you want to email us and say hi or share your stories, you can always email tim@darknessradio.com. That's tim@darknessradio.com. Or you can email me, dave@darknessradio.com. That's dave@darknessradio.com. And we're back tomorrow. Even though it's a holiday, we're coming out swinging, Tim. We've got two shows for tomorrow. That's how we roll.
Oh, yeah.
10 shows. We've got our regular Beyond the Darkness, and we've got a brand new episode of True Crime Tuesday. Oh, very chilling. You can, if you missed it, make sure you go back to the beginning of this episode. We play a clip from this episode, The Devil and Ted Bundy. You have to hear this to believe it. The entire episode airs tomorrow. You can subscribe by going to darknessradio.com, clicking on the True Crime Tuesday banner, and you can subscribe there and never miss another minute in the best in paranormal talk radio or true crime talk radio with Beyond the Darkness and True Crime Tuesday.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.